Welcome to episode 34 of Booty and Bossy Eat, Drink, Knit. Good job, especially because Bossy has a cold. It's the beginning of the school year, so yeah.
Yep. Exposure to all of the extra germs of students coming back. Yay.
Yes, tis the season. So we have a super easy and amazingly delicious recipe from our good oldie and goodie, the Silver Palette Cookbook. It's called Linguine with Tomatoes and Basil. Do you want to tell us about the recipe?
Yes, this is actually a recipe that is good for this time of year because you have a lot of fresh tomatoes, at least in the Northeast. This is the time of year when you have the tomatoes coming in. And I did actually, despite squirrels, chipmunks, and rabbits. Our backyard is known as Watership Down to the rabbit community. I did actually have a fair number of tomatoes this year. I will take a picture so that people can be envious of them.
People being me, yeah, we have a condo with a deck, so the best I could do would be cherry tomatoes.
But I'm figuring that a lot of our listeners, hi, Mom.
Hi, Mom.
Might have access to a farmer's market where there are some nice fresh tomatoes, even some heirloom tomatoes.
I scored some really good heirloom tomatoes from Met Market that are on sale. Which probably won't be on sale by the time this comes out, but are really good.
Yeah. Well, and I do have to say, speaking of mom, this is a recipe that I associate with mom because I remember a number of years ago she came out to visit us. And it was at a moment when we were in the middle of the ongoing renovations of our house, and we really didn't have a kitchen. We had a microwave, a George Foreman grill, and the toaster oven. Toaster oven, very important. Anyway, I made this recipe for her because you don't have to cook the sauce. And to me, this is kind of like summer tomatoes in a bowl because that's actually what it is. So, what you do is you cut up about 3 cups of fresh tomatoes, chopped up into kind of large chunks. I usually try and get ones that are pretty ripe from the garden, and then you add a pound of brie. I tear it up into large chunks. The original recipe says to cut off the rind. I don't usually do that. I usually just tear it all up and I leave the rind in. A cup of cleaned fresh basil leaves cut into strips, 3 garlic cloves peeled, finely minced, 1 cup of the best quality olive oil, a teaspoon of salt, a half teaspoon of freshly ground pepper. And basically, you throw all of this into a bowl. I usually do it in the morning and it makes the whole kitchen smell good. Kind of like the smell of onions. The what was that book that you read?
Paris to the Moon, Adam Gopnik.
What did he say about?
That there was something about the smell of cooking onions in butter. That meant that it was the start of dinner, and it just felt like the end of the day, time to relax and just enjoy your meal. Every time I cook onions, I think of that. It's like, it's so true. And I don't even like onions.
I know, and that something good is coming. It's like this marker in a way. But I love making this in the morning. And then basically, what you're doing is letting the tomatoes kind of macerate, and the acids in the tomatoes break down the cheese. And you have that wonderful smell of garlic and fresh basil, and you just let it sit there. And then you bring salted water to a boil, add a tablespoon of olive oil. The original recipe actually has you cook 1.5 pounds of linguine. I usually just do a pound because I like the proportion of sauce. I like more sauce in it. Usually cook it al dente. And then you drain the pasta and you pour the sauce in and immediately toss it. basically the heat of the pasta melts the brie and turns it into this wonderful creamy fresh tomato. It's kind of summer in a bowl. It's super fresh and it's just a really great recipe. I think one of the things I like about it in particular is it's not a lot to make the sauce in the morning. You're just chopping up the tomatoes and the garlic. You can do that pretty quickly. And then if you come home at the end of the day, all you have to do is make the pasta, and it's pretty much done.
Yeah, I agree. And I think on the proportions, well, first of all, I cut off just the edge of the brie. So I had a at Costco, they sell a brie round that's a little over a pound. I think it's a pound and a third. And so I cut off what I thought was about a, I guess I could have weighed it, but what I thought was a third, and then I cut around the edge for the cut off that rind, but I left the bottom and the top rinds, if that makes sense. And then I cut it. I don't know what they mean by tear into, because I feel like that's messy.
Yeah, I don't know. I usually do tear it just because I'm worried that what if cheese gets stuck on the knife? That is my big concern, as opposed to getting stuck on my fingers, which then I can clean them by licking them, I guess.
Yeah, don't waste any cheese.
It's all
And
about the cheese,
you
grommet.
got grommet. It's well, and the thing is, like, if you don't like the rind, then cut it off. However, I will say, as a the spouse of a French person, that the French do not like when if you know have brie is usually in a point. If you will be ostracized and forever banned from France, if you cut off the point of the brie, because the idea is that everybody gets equal parts of the brie, which because it is definitely bitter, and so your proportional
It's
dose.
true. If you cut it off, you would get the biggest piece of the center.
Right. And you would get the biggest piece, sort of like that, the middle of a watermelon, you know, like that's the best part. And you, so it's sort of selfish. Also, if you kept doing it that way, somebody would wind up with the rind at the
All of
end.
the rind, yeah.
Yeah. All of the rind, just like the crust of a pizza. Yeah. So that's kind of a no-no.
That is interesting. I didn't know that. And I'm just forever grateful that you have shared this bit of French etiquette so that I won't be kicked out of France for being the big dumb American and being like, well, I'm going to take the best piece. Let me go put it in my Le Creuset.
Well, the way that I learned this was that one of my first dates with my husband, we were having a picnic. We were actually going to see, this was very shishi, we were going to see Battleship Potemkin, which is a silent movie, and the Philadelphia Orchestra was playing.
Oh, they were doing the score to it. Oh,
They were
wow.
doing the score to it. This was at, I think, the Mann Music Center. I don't know. It was in a park in Philadelphia. So I brought a picnic and we had our picnic blanket. I had the brie and the baguette and strawberry. We get it all that. And I cut off the point. And it was like, whoop, you know,
I
like,
cannot marry her.
it was like, you know, a record skipping.
This is very French now that you say that, because one of my favorite memories of your wedding was when we went to a local ceramics place and I bought this plate and it has a chicken in the middle, but it has numbers around the side so that if you put a pie in the middle of it and you have eight people, it shows you where to cut for eight. And it's very equitable. And if you have 12 people, then it's got the 12, or if you're going to only do four, or six, but however many pieces, it gives you a guideline. I will take a picture of it because I've never seen a plate like that in America.
Well, their motto is égalité, fraternité, et liberté. So égalité, equality, comes first.
And the brie etiquette speaks to that. Everybody gets the same amount of rind to center, and my chicken plate, everybody gets an equal slice. It's so perfect. But I do remember going back to when I made this recipe and mom was visiting, and we didn't have electricity in our kitchen yet. I mean, it was really, we had this sort of table, we had the beginnings of the cupboards. My George Foreman grill and microwave and toaster oven were actually in another room, but I made this because I did have fresh tomatoes and basil from the garden. And we had all these candles on the table because we had no light in that room. And mom is sitting there and she goes, "I just think this is so wonderful how every night you eat by candlelight." And then I'm like, "Because we don't have any lights, mom."
Well, and I think we may have talked about this in a past episode. I remember we went raspberry picking one time, you and me, and we made raspberry pie. And it happened to be that there was no power, but luckily we had a gas oven, and it was just wonderful. It just felt like the good parts of the olden days without all the dysentery. But mom, the next day, she said, "Yeah, I know, because I found candle wax drippings all over the tables."
If you have access to fresh tomatoes, definitely make this recipe. It's all of the good things about summer. It's easy. Even if you have to wait a couple of days, I was going to give everybody a tip about ripening tomatoes. If you've got some tomatoes that are a little underripe, you can put them ideally a south-facing window. You want to turn them upside down so that the end where the stem is sitting on the window, because that's actually the hardiest part of the tomato. And if you put it the other way, that's the softest part, and it's probably going to go bad more quickly, but they'll ripen better and not turn to mush with the softer side up and the harder side on the bottom. That said, if you've got a bunch of tomatoes sitting on your window, certain people in this house need to be careful about opening and closing the windows with tomatoes on them, because there have been incidents where tomatoes have been crushed in the opening and closing of the windows. And then you have to clean the windows. Or you can just not clean those windows.
They're actually a really big pain. Bossy's windows are like, how many panes?
Oh, 12 over 12. Yeah.
I think the word pain,
Yes.
PAIN, comes from pain, PA.
Panes. Yes. I think that's very true. One time we were cleaning our windows, which are 12 over 12, true divided light, because when we restored our house, we wanted to have windows that were in keeping with what they would have had. But they're terrible windows to clean, and they're you can't get them out easily. And so my husband was working on cleaning them and popping them back in, and I hear all this cursing, and then finally he gets it back in and he goes, "Fuck you, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you." He's giving the finger to the window.
I feel like that is just so true of so many things. If you like when you trip over a curb and you want to be like, fuck you, curb. It's not me, it's you. One other tomato tip. I did not know this until recently. You probably did, but you should not put your tomatoes in the refrigerator.
Yeah.
And I don't really know why. I know from experience that they do fine when they're out on your shelf. We always have refrigerator problems. And in fact, my son recently said that one of his life goals was not to have a precarious refrigerator. Like when you open it
Oh, yeah.
and everything, when you have to move this thing to get to that, and everybody's always like, where's the mustard? Yes. So we have a constant battle with that. So when you keep your tomatoes out of the fridge, then it gives you a little more room in your fruit and vegetable drawers.
Yeah, I'm not sure why that is that you just shouldn't, but I know that like in restaurants and stuff, you always had the tomatoes out. You
Oh,
didn't really
shoot.
keep them in the refrigerator or in the walk-in or anything like that. Yeah.
Well, actually, I think you could probably Google it. Enzymes have some kind of enzyme that breaks down and responds to cold. And so you'll get a mushy, mealy tomato. Keeping them at room temperature, stem side down, also prevents moisture loss, too. That's why you want to put them that way. So, yes. Good job, Bossy.
Mm.
Doing the research there.
Well, so Booty, do you want to tell us about our knitting pop culture moment for our episode 34?
Yes, our knitting and pop culture moment. If you don't subscribe, well, first subscribe to our newsletters because they're fabulous. Bossy writes them. But then subscribe to the Modern Daily Knitting because they have excellent, not just great patterns and yarn and stuff, but the writers. They have somebody who does a letter from Paris, Franklin Habit. His writings or musings are really wonderful. It just always it brightens my day when I get his. They also have what to knit to, like what to watch while you're knitting. I mean, this is brilliant because you need something to, if you've got a stockinette project. I do think it would be fabulous if there was a way to classify, like, this is good for plain stockinette in the round. This is okay. You can maybe do a simple stripes or color work or simple, but not that complicated. And then this is brioche. That's, I mean, brioche rib is just like regular ribbing, in my opinion. But if you're doing the kind of decreases and increases and keeping track of all of that, then, or God forbid, lace work. I think I will take brioche over lace work. And here's why.
Okay.
Brioche, it's kind of like color work. You can see what's happening as you're doing it. And so it's sort of like color work. You can see what's happening as you're doing it, and you can see a picture forming. So if you see a mistake, it's not that terrible to rip back and get to a better spot. Brioche is absolutely horrible to rip back to. So it's a little level above co color work. Lace, A, I don't usually see the mistake until it's way too late. And then it's really hard to get back onto. So you can't see what you're doing as you're going, unless it's terribly obvious. And then it's too late. I guess on the flip side is if you can't see it, probably nobody else does.
I don't know. I think when you make a mistake in lace, it's like it's got that little arrow that's like, there's where she screwed up.
Because it doesn't necessarily show up until you block it.
Right.
Then it kind of opens up and
Set
you're
up.
like, whoa, that's
Yeah.
not right.
But I do agree with you. I think that's a brilliant suggestion that Netflix should have just a little rating system that would say good for stockinette could be like A, stockinette, B would be color work or some pattern, but not without a lot of complication. And then C and D would, and F would be, you shouldn't be watching anything while you're doing that pattern. Stop it.
Right.
I will say I have a hard time. Whenever I watch, I'm like, well, it can't have subtitles because I need to be working on this knitting and I can't be reading and looking at the knitting. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, the MDK came out with a episode of Gilmore Girls, which I never watched Gilmore Girls, so I'm not that familiar with the show. But apparently, in season 7, episode 9, there was an episode that was basically centered around knitting.
Who knew? Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So tell us, I mean, I didn't watch Gilmore Girls either. I was somewhat familiar with the woman, Amy Sherman Palladino, who developed Gilmore Girls because she also developed The Marvelous Miss Maisel, and I've watched a few episodes of that. She also was a writer on Roseanne when she was like 23, a writer on Roseanne. So incredibly talented. She's known for the rapid fire, witty repartee back and forth. And you could see some of this in, what was it, episode 9 of on season 7 of Gilmore Girls. But so tell us what the knitting premise is, because I thought this was pretty funny, actually.
So the main character, is it Lorelai? Recently eloped in Paris. And so she's coming back with her new husband, and the town is trying to raise money for a new bridge. And the way that they're going to raise money is they're going to have a knit-a-thon where everybody sits and knits for the day. And this is supposed to be in November. And they get people to sponsor them per skein. So if you're a knitter, you're like, okay.
Already, I'm thinking they didn't consult anybody on the knitting.
it's like, okay, so per skein, don't choose lace weight or finger, you're gonna like get your super bulky, ginormous, and then it. Even then, you could maybe get through three, four skeins. Marie Green from Olive Knits said that one time she knit on, there was a 2-hour flight, and she was watching a thriller movie, and she managed to get through a whole skein of worsted or DK. Now, she's an extremely fast knitter, and she was knitting fast for her. So if you like maximum speed, that gives you about four skeins. And that's not on a fingering or a thinner yarn. So yeah, I have to say that I'm gonna say bullshit on that. But the whole idea of sitting and one and the other thing is like sitting and knitting for, I mean, I know there are people that do this. They there is Gigi does like a food, a knitting, basically this. You sponsor her to knit all day, and the money goes for to a charity for food.
It's this beautiful New England town. Probably wouldn't do it in November, and that, and they comment on that, how their hands are getting sore and stuff. But when you walk into the town green, the town is supposed to actually be somewhere around Hartford, Connecticut. I think it's like there's a lot of very picturesque New England towns with town greens. It's so Hollywood because they've got these two giant balls of yarn with these needles, giant needles going up that say, are holding across a banner that says knit-a-thon. And when they are carrying these, the guy says, be careful with those. Even though they're decorative, they're still sharp, you know.
The whole premise of this, the decorations probably cost more than the money they raised. The fact that whatever yarn you buy, like that's gonna probably cost more money than what you raised.
But they do have these great little moments like this. There's a guy walking through who's saying, free needles, free needles. And then Lorelai's character says, who says Stars Hollow is not progressive?
Yes.
So there's all these little, and I didn't even recognize her at first, but Melissa McCarthy is the main character's sort of best friend, and she's a cook, and her name is Suki. Most of the characters seem to have at least tried. They all pretend to loop around the yarn. She doesn't. She just keeps poking the needles, stabbing the needles together. But she's Melissa McCarthy, and she's so stinking cute that it doesn't matter. And at one point, she says, I can't tell if my hands are cramping or numb, but they just keep knitting. So I'm trying not to think about it, but I guess I'm thinking about it right now.
I have to say, and this is where Wallace and Gromit was so great, was that they did clearly consult. So one of the things they do is they don't lace their yarn through their fingers. They hold it like you're grabbing something, and then they make these big arm movements to go around. I mean, I guess some beginners would maybe do that.
Well, it reminds me of, did you ever see, I don't know if it was on Instagram, that this woman was narrating how to knit, and she's like, first you stab it.
Right. You wrap it around
You
their neck.
rip its guts out and then you throw it off a cliff.
Right.
They
Right.
all seem to have gone to that school of knitting.
But so, yes, yeah, so that's our knitting and pop culture moment. And so, what are you knitting?
I am finished with Glimmer.
I'm sorry you have to do your own trumpet. It's so excited for you. Yay.
I know, and I haven't blocked it yet. I'm gonna do that now, but we were gonna have people over for dinner. So in our house, if you block something, then that means you are claiming the dining room table. So I couldn't claim the dining room, but we had people over for dinner last night. So now the dining room table's free. Gonna block it. But then I started, and I recommend this to, I'd never thought about this way, but I'm working on the bunny for the bunny that matches the baby blanket that I made for my neighbor's daughter. I have a deadline. She is moving on October 11th, so I need to finish the bunny. But it is so nice to work on a project where you can make an arm in 20 minutes. The scale was like a revelation. Like if you, whenever you work on a big project, then work on a project that's got a lot of small pieces because it's very gratifying.
I agree, or a hat, something that doesn't take that much time, and yeah, washcloth, anything like that. It's just, yeah, it's so nice when you alternate. I too have a finished object. I finished my composition, so we are all set for Rhinebeck. I can't really tell you, there's one yarn that I don't even know what it is. I think it might be silk, and I couldn't really tell you how I made it, other than I basically made a rectangle in a garter with increases, so it creates like a V with different colors. So that, and then I used that rectangle and then made a brioche border. And the brioche border is a Nancy Marchant Sister Janie, and it's from her book Knitting Fresh Brioche. And then once I had that big rectangle, I just folded it in half and seamed it. So I have the usual easy folded punch-up.
I really like the stripes and how when you wear it different ways, it ends up looking like a different garment because if you wear it one way, the stripes are kind of just going across. But if you wear it another way, they're moving in at a V. I think that's very cool. And I think a lot of people will make comments on it at Rhinebeck because I remember last year when you wore some of your composions, because one of the things I learned is that you see a lot of people and you're like, oh, I know that pattern. Like I wore a pattern that I'd made that was on one of the Webb's catalogs. It was on the front cover. I don't remember what it was. And I saw a lot of other people wearing that.
Yeah, that's fun.
But then when you see somebody and you're like, I haven't seen, I think that's the only one of those. Then people are like, hey,
A
that your
second.
own composition?
Yeah.
I
Yeah.
will say, getting back to the Gilmore Girls for a second, one of the things I thought was really funny was when they had all the town coming together, everybody's dressed in like terrible hand knitted, like your great great aunt made that from yarn that was on super sale from Target or Ocean State Job Lot or something. Everybody, and they're all ill fitting. With hats that didn't really fit, and these really long scarves and terrible colors. But the basic premise that everybody would come and sit down, and I don't want to spoil it, but everybody lasts about an hour. They have raised $2,200. It's like in the early 2000s, and everybody's looking at hours and hours of knitting. And then Lorelai's husband basically just donates $7,800. And everybody's like, yay, we can go home. We can stop knitting. Then she says, but wait, why are you all going, home? Where's your Stars Hollow spirit? Where is the love of knitting just for knitting's sake?
Yeah, I totally would have kept going. Been like, well, hey, I want to finish my row.
There's an earlier scene too where her husband comes down, new husband comes down, and he says, well, look at you knitting away like a proper married woman, the picture of domesticity. And he says, but what are you actually knitting? And she says, well, I'm practicing, and it doesn't matter what I'm knitting. I am knitting just to knit. Well, that's very philosophical.
Like, in a way, a gauge swatch, you could say, is knitting just to knit. I mean, you were trying to get, I mean, she's actually trying to improve her speed because it's by skein, but gauge swatch, you're kind of knitting. I mean, it doesn't have the, it's not about the object, it's about the process.
Well, yeah, and I do think they might have consulted some theorist about knitting and sort of the power of the process. They clearly didn't consult anyone in the actual practical, but I love the idea that of knitting for the sake of knitting. I thought that was brilliant. She's also wearing a t-shirt that has a skull and then two knitting needles underneath it crossed, and it says knit or go home. I wanted that t-shirt. There was also, right when they showed people walking in between the giant knitting balls and underneath the decorative but still dangerous knitting needles, they had three people walking in, and they had jackets on. Imprinted on the back of the jackets, it said close knit family. So I mean
Yeah,
that
all the
just
knitting puns.
all
Yeah,
the knitting
that's good.
puns, they clearly had somebody that consulted on the importance of knitting puns and the general philosophy that knitting for the sake of knitting in and of itself is a valuable thing, and that you can save. The other line I loved was when she says that she's talking to her husband. She's like, well, you didn't have to give all that money. The point was to save the bridge with knitting. I know that doesn't make any sense.
That is kind of like the knitting for the knit-a-thon for food. Like, how, what does this have to do with knitting that you're just donating? It's just a way to get people. But also, I mean, all these fundraisers are like that. Like the one where you dumped a bucket of water on your head for Lou Gehrig's disease. Like that would, but it worked. So I guess people will give money for.
I think it's the idea of getting together as a community, and that it was spending the 8 hours together knitting and drinking coffee and sharing that time. And her husband didn't, understood one aspect of it, but not the larger one. I thought it was clever in how it explored all of these aspects of
There is a charity that you can, if you want to knit for a cause. I did get recently find out from Becky, the Knitted Knockers group are low on their inventory. And these are basically They're a very small project. You just make their inserts for bras for people that have had mastectomies.
Oh.
And I made a few for mom. I think they have crochet and a knit pattern. We'll put a link in the show notes. And they don't take very long, don't take much yarn. They do need to be, nobody wants a scratchy wool against skin. So they do need to be like an all cotton. And I think they prefer if it has more skin toned colors.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, that's a very good organization. And apparently they are in need of some.
I would do that.
I like the name Knitted Knockers.
I love that. Well, and that is an excellent small pro. Well, I get, unless you have like size D, but that is an excellent small project to do after you've finished a big project.
Yes,
So,
exactly. Yeah.
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 But well, Bodhi, I think we've covered a fair amount of ground. We've covered summer in a bowl with the fabulous fresh tomato recipe. We've talked about Gilmore Girls and the knitting to save a bridge and all of the various puns that episode included. We've celebrated the finishing of Glimmer and the beginning of the bunny and the finishing of your own composition, which will be unveiled, I guess, at Rhinebeck. So I think it's time to say, whatever you do,
You
don't
knit
knit
like
like
a
my
sister.
sister.
That was a really good one. Oh, but do check out our show notes at bootyandbossy.com.